Reliable socioeconomic and political practices have jeopardized our society. In the face of these affairs, which have kept our society at the brink of collapse, information remains the deal breaker. Foundation Radio, in its strive to remain the voice of the voiceless, has embarked on the incisive investigative reporting and analysis to reshape our society and give it a moral face. Join our reporters in the news magazine program News Extra, a one-hour news production intended to uncover striking societal concerns and demystify them. Get the deepest understanding about your economic, political, and sociocultural issues in News Extra. News Extra on Foundation Radio every Saturday from 7 to 8:30 a.m. Society has been wrecked by economic improprieties, political maneuvers, moral decadence, and debasing sociocultural practices. In the face of these vices, which have kept our society at the brink of collapse, constructive information remains the deal breaker. Join our formidable team of reporters on News Extra with incisive investigative reporting and analysis tailored to reshape our society and give it a moral face. News Extra is a production of the news service of Foundation Radio that uncovers striking societal concerns and demystifies them. Get the deepest understanding about economic, political, and sociocultural issues in News Extra. News Extra, your window to constructive criticism.
It is a very painful and sad feeling to pay for services that are not rendered, to really need something, not just to want and being unable to have it. When we look at the water crisis in Cameroon, we look at the rationing, where some go for days without water. You see mothers with babies being unable to have water for cloth and napkin washing. But at the end of the day, bills still keep coming. We then begin to wonder, after all the aid, projects, and conferences on making water more available, why is it still so lacking? Is there not enough effort being made? Are the people designated to do the job not doing it well? Who is to be blamed? Nature, energy supply, or those in charge? It is said that if you don't do the things the way it is supposed to be done, then everybody suffers and anarchy reigns. When we say there is enough for man's sufficiency and not for his greed, then why not be provided the basic necessities of life? If the authorities in place cannot satisfy the needs of the people, why not step down and let others work and do a better job? Why not say, I have played my part, now some other person should have a chance? In a society where politics is not based on impartiality but rather on the basis of what I can benefit, where the same people stay in power each day and are so satisfied with not giving others a chance. Worse still, staying in power is one thing. One thing to hold on to that power even when you no longer can is another. But the real question is, how do you handle that power? How do you treat the people you are designated to serve? Do you abuse that power or do you work for the benefit of all? It all comes down to your conscience, knowing what is right and doing it. If you are a senator or a parliamentarian, then work for the good of your people. And we should remember that happiness is all that keeps us going. Don't ever give it up for anything. And as we mourn the loss of the great musician, La Parade Mbanga, as he was popularly known, we all go back to his music and the impact, influence and knowledge it brought into our lives. It is an example for all to have a substantive life that is worth something to you and to society. Whatever you have to do, do it well. If you owe services to a society that desperately needs it, then provide those services. This is News Extra on Foundation Radio. The News Extra team welcomes you to another enriching edition of News Extra on Foundation Radio. During the course of the program, we shall be analyzing, giving opinions, commentaries, also news and interviews to best inform and explain who and what make news within the week. This edition of the program has only become a reality after a week of intensive work done by the News Extra team to ensure that everything of importance and that made news within the week will be yours. I am Priscilla Ninge for presentation, welcoming you on behalf of the entire team. To kick off the program, we shall be revisiting some of those events and people who made news within the week. Lanza Vela Venue monitored the week and now updates us on how events unfolded in the following report.
The week registered a lot of news events as funds of Mogamo in the Batibo subdivision resolved to give their localities a facelift. This was during a meeting of Mogamo Funds Union that held at Ngemowa Funds Palace. Just as the 11th General Assembly of the Community Credit Company PLC resolved to transform the microfinance institution into a full-fledged bank. Board members took the decision during a board meeting that held at the Bamena Azam Hotel. Meanwhile, the Secretary General of the Kalmun Teachers Trade Union, KATO, re-echoed the union's decision to join other trade unions in the country for the second phase of their industrial strike action to come up in the first week of the third term. Their decision, he said, was due to the fact that the meeting held after the first strike action did not yield any fruit. And onto our national page, national investigative officials from different anti-corruption institutions were drilled in Yaounde on the new methods and techniques of fighting against money laundering. The week-long training was organized by Central African Action Group Against Money Laundering. The death was announced of Cameroonian musician Lambo Sanjo-Pierre Roger, also known as Lapi Rodembanga. He died in Buffalo, New York at the age of 57. In addition, the incumbent president of the Senate, Marcel Nyat Njifenji, was re-elected for another one-year mandate. The 79-year-old was elected during an elective plenary session of the upper house that held in Yaounde, just as his counterpart of the National Assembly, Kavaya Igejibril, was re-elected to lead the 23-man bureau of the house for the next legislative year. Also, the Ministry of Water, Resources and Energy organized week-long activities in preparation for the celebration of the International Water Day in Cameroon. The activities, which included visits to water sources, debates, and conferences, were placed under the theme of the 2014 edition of the World Water Day, Water and Energy, just as 16 police officials from some Central African states held a two-day training program in Yaounde on the fight against human trafficking. The participants from Cameroon, Congo-Brazzaville, Democratic Republic of Congo, Central African Republic and Chad were drilled on new techniques of determining criminals involved in human trafficking and how to carry out investigation on the subject. And out of the country, Crimea voted overwhelmingly to separate from Ukraine and join Russia. According to results from the polls, 95% of the population took their stand. Pro-Russian activists, some of them armed, stormed the headquarters of the Ukrainian Navy in the Crimean city of Sevastopol. Russian flags were seen flying from buildings and several Ukrainian servicemen were seen leaving the base. It came a day after Crimean leaders signed a treaty with Russia absorbing the peninsula into the Russian Federation after a disputed referendum. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said Russia will face escalating EU sanctions if it does not take steps to ease the crisis over Crimea. Mrs. Merkel, who was speaking ahead of an EU summit in Brussels, said the current political situation meant the G8 effectively no longer existed. Those were some of the major stories that made news during the week. Back to you, Priscilla Ninge Ndayo.
Thank you, Lanza Vela, for updating us on the activities that make news within the week.
Foundation Radio.
The World Water Day has been observed. It is on the 22nd of March since 1993, when the United Nations General Assembly declared March 22nd as World Day for Water. This day was first formally proposed in Agenda 21 of the 1992 United Nations Conference on Environment and Development in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Observance began in 1993 and has grown significantly ever since for the general public to show support. It is for the public to not use your taps throughout the whole day. The 2014 World Water Day is being observed under the theme, Water and Energy, which are closely linked to energy generation and transmissions, which require utilization of water resources, particularly of hydroelectric, nuclear, and thermal energy sources. Conversely, about 8% of the global energy generation is used for pumping, treating, and transporting water to various consumers. It is for all these facts that News Extra took interest in knowing and analyzing the theme of this year's World Water Day. Lanza Vela is the man on that beat.
The water energy nexus is the relationship between how much water is evaporated to generate and transmit energy and how much energy it needs to collect, clean, move, store, and dispose of water. All types of electricity generation consume water, either to process the raw materials used in the facility or fuel, constructing and maintaining the plant, or just generate the electricity itself. Renewable power sources, as photovoltaic, solar, and wind power, which require little water to produce energy, require water in processing the raw materials to build the turbines and solar panels. If a wind turbine is mounted on a concrete or steel tower, additional tons of water are required in the tower's construction. In countries like the US, about 7.6 liters of water is evaporated to create 1 kilowatt hour of energy. This water is consumed in thermoelectric plants, which are power plants converting waste heat into electrical power and evaporated in reservoirs for hydroelectric plants. An average of 68 liters of fresh water is evaporated at hydroelectric plants. The production of electricity to power 160-watt incandescent light bulb over the course of a year would evaporate about 3,000 to 6,000 gallons, that is, 24,000 liters of water. Thermal power plants require large amounts of cooling water. The demand for cooling water can be in competition with agriculture and municipal demands in some areas, with the demand for water for irrigation around 40% overall. As a result of climate change, some rivers are running lower in the dry season, putting additional strain on power production. As energy requires water, water supply and sewage disposal needs energy. Drinking water must be pumped to the treatment plant, pre-treated, and then pumped to consumers. In areas where fresh water is scarce and drinking water must be brought in from a long distance, the energy footprint for this drinking water is extremely high. The energy consumed for pumping groundwater is typically between 537 kilowatt hour and 2,270 kilowatt hour per million gallons, depending on pumping depth. The water energy nexus is therefore a term for the interrelationship of both water and energy. Excessive consumption of both can lead to resource depletion, pollution, and an overall increase in the price for each. So, by conserving water and reducing runoff, the negative impact of the water energy nexus can be mitigated.
It is good to know that everything that has a positive impact has a negative impact. Thank you, Lanza Vela, for that clarification. As the water crisis intensifies in Bamenda, News Extra took the case study of Mile 6. Anderson Akol visited inhabitants and asked to know how serious the water crisis is. He spoke to some Mile 6 residents with the Quarterhead Inclusive and compiled the following report.
From the numerous complaints gotten from the inhabitants of Mile 6 about the scarcity of water in their neighborhood, this reporter decided to get to some of these inhabitants to find out from them what the water situation in Mile 6 Ngomgam Mankon looks like. Just then, I met Mr. Richard with his wheelbarrow, in which was a 40 liters container. He was from Mile 7 to fetch water.
Thank you very much. My name is Fobuye Richard. I stay in Mile 6, Mankon here. We have a lot of problems with water. The snake is unable to supply us with water. We are now forced to leave from here and go right up to Mile 7, who can carry water at a source there known as Timtim. So it's really a pity for us. So I don't know what snake is doing. Thank you.
How often does water come?
You get water only in the night around 4 a.m., 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. And then it is over.
Every day.
That's how it's happening.
Taking the findings about the water situation in Mile 6 serious, this reporter decided to visit some homes of inhabitants of Mile 6, and when I got to Madame Anita, this is what she told me.
Well, as somebody living in Mile 6, I think the water crisis in our Kate is really serious. We don't know what is happening. We can even go for like 1 week without water, or during the day when people are supposed to use water, there is no water. It's when people are sleeping that you have water flowing, and it's really a problem because, the mothers, everybody, water is life. So if there's no water, we don't know what to do. And sometimes when there is even water, it flows very slow, and sometimes it's really, really dirty. I'm talking of the example of yesterday night when I was carrying water. The water is not just, it's not something you can even use because it's dirty more than even water from Mizam. So I don't even know whether the people of those in charge, if they know that people are suffering, going through all this. But I think what they have to do something, because each month they keep on sending us bills when we are not even seeing what we are using. So I want to say that it's not only the problem of Mile 6, but the case of Mile 6 is really something people should actually do something about.
Just like Anita, Madame Margaret was of the same opinion.
The water crisis in Mile 6 is very disturbing, because you cannot run your house comfortably. It's either the water is not there, you have to get up and at a certain 1 o'clock a.m. or 2 a.m. to collect water, which is not convenience. Or there are times when you leave the taps open and then maybe you are away from home, suddenly the water comes and it floods the whole place. But we think that it is very, very inconveniencing, because water is life. There's nothing you can do without water, beginning with bathing, cooking and doing laundry. If there's no water, then you cannot function correctly.
So any word to the officials of the water corporation?
Of course, yes. The way they partition the water is so not in order. We know that water should flow in the taps all the time. They should let us know whether there is a problem. And if there's a problem, it is only they who can solve it. We're only the consumers. And when they bring the bills, we have to pay on time. So they should do their own part to let the water flow constantly in the pipes. If they do that, we'll be very grateful.
From this moment, this reporter moved on to the next compound, where I met Mr. Humphrey at his tap It was about 1 p.m., but his tap was not flowing. He, however, made this reporter to know that it is becoming normal in mile 6 that you have to sacrifice your sleep to get water.
You know what they for place. You got the call you are sleep, say one carry water. But where you the pay bill, where would you expect water meet, water to come out? Always. For me, I see say snake. Better if na snake, if be same snake, they give water for night. Me, they give them for daytime, they cut them for night. Me, all man, we could carry water for daytime. When one be for night, where all man is sleep, people they begin sleeping and sleep for night, then for the wake up, call you sleep, say so they carry water. But you know, carry water, even plenty. You want carry water? Carry water to container, water already cut till sometime again at around 2 a.m., 4 a.m. before water fee come. For daytime, people they shouldn't so. Water now they work a carry now, down bush, down bush. Small time will get cholera for my six. So I don't know what we sneak one time. So me sneak, see what we do before we get water. We get water always. Better now for daytime than for night.
As if to know if the quarterhead of Ngomgam is aware of the water crisis, I met Mr. Tumasang Jacob, who is the quarterhead of Ngomgam, asked to know if he is aware of the water crisis in Mile 6. This is what he told me.
Yes, I'm very aware. The water crisis in Ngomgam, I just very often, everyone who has tapped from snake has the same problem in Ngomgam. The water is very irregular. As it is irregular, we are sometimes forced to spend sleepless nights waiting on water. And usually a few days when we may have water, it comes in as early as 2 a.m. in the morning. And before it's 4 o'clock, there is no more water. And the rest of the day, we don't have water at all. And it doesn't come even, assuming that you program yourself that at 2 o'clock you may have water, there are certain days that you will never, even if you are up by 2 o'clock. It's a very sad situation.
So how have you people been coping with the water crisis?
Yes, we've been coping it because water is a necessity. Sometimes we are forced even to supplement drinking water by buying tangi and or some other sources of purified water, because most of the running streams that we have around here have all been contaminated. You are never very sure to get any good water from a natural source anymore. And even for laundry, it is most difficult and very nasty even to use the running streams for doing this, because there's a lot of pollution of water. You see people, they run engine oil, dirty things into the stream, and the site is very unacceptable for human activity at all. We mostly use the running streams only for block molding and building projects. Even for cooking, we don't do it.
He did not end without passing a message to the managers of the water corporation.
It's a total plea that we are water short, and they know that snake should know that water is the only necessity which we cannot subsidize, and we can do nothing without water. Living a good life, a healthy life, depends on water. And I hope that if our oral complaints to snake have not yielded fruit, I think that by this interview and on this water day for this year, we hope that they can come to our help and improve on the water. I'm saying this for Ngomgam. I do not know what other quarters have, but generally, when we sit conversing with other people, they seem to be complaining about water everywhere in all of Bamenda.
Just as an intention to protect the inhabitants of his quarter, he further said,
I will tell my people of Ngomgam that first, they may not depend too much on crying. They should make an effort, if at all it means some sort of support to be given this water corporation to improve on the water. I would advise all my people in Ngomgam to come. If snake can tell us what to do, we'll be willing, either manually or financially.
Now convinced that Mile 6 is in deep shit as far as the supply of potable drinking water is concerned, I had no option than to join my voice to the inhabitants of Mile 6, where I work, to cry to the officials of Le Cameroonais des Eaux to come to their rescue.
All attempts made by news actress Anderson Akol to talk to Cameroonete Zoo on the scarcity of water in neighborhoods in Bamenda met with a brick wall of no explanation. Shumas is a development organization that has been initiating and promoting private initiatives towards sustainable development, such as private endeavors to provide the supply of potable water in local community. Lanza Vela caught up with the director of Shumas, Jerem Stephen, and in the following interview, starts by asking what Shumas was all about.
Yeah, Shumas is a development organization involved in integrated sustainable rural development. And to achieve this vision, we have 8 programs that help us to achieve these objectives, including education, water, environment, agriculture, etc.
All right, our focus this time is on water because Cameroon joins the rest of the international community March the 22nd to commemorate and celebrate the 22nd edition of World Water Day, and under the theme Water and Energy. In your opinion, can you tell us the relationship between water and energy?
Yes, water and energy, there are two concepts that go together. You know, and both of them are very scarce now. The demand side is high and the supply side is less. And the solution actually is highly necessary. You know, to most energy sources, you depends on water. And to get energy itself, you need water, and then to get water, you need energy. So the two are so linked. And the curious thing nowadays, especially with the coming of climate change, is that the two are highly less in supply. Meanwhile, demand is increasing with increasing population.
Okay, Mr. Stephen, you're the director of an NGO that is so much involved in enabling the people of the suburbs to get access to water. How far have you gone with this project?
Yeah, you know, the first point is that, as I said, with climate change, scientists are saying that we'll be losing about 20% of water that we are having. And, you know, lack of water leads to many diseases. There are quite a good number of diseases that is in consequence of water. So Shumas, being involved in rural development, could not keep water and sanitation aside. And so far, we have more than 180 village water communities, and we have more than 200 water in various schools that we construct, because every school that we construct, if there's no water, we have to provide water in addition to various village water projects that we provide all over the country.
Can you cite some of the examples?
Yeah, just in we're here in Bamenda 3, and there's the Zenifo Water Project that we've supported first and second phase. There is the Nyolea Water that we just supported of recent. And last Friday, just exactly 1 week today, we were at Kurum in the West Region to supply water. So we have water projects almost all 10 regions of the country.
Okay, you've taught most of these suburbs, apparently. Do you think the Water Day is worth celebrating in Cameroon?
Yeah, knowing that water is life, you know, me and you were sitting here today. If there's no water, I'm sure in the next 1 month, all of us we have to wither out. So water is so important because almost everything is involving water. And celebration actually brings that awareness. But sometimes when you're moving around, until something pricks you before you understand that there is a need to look at this thing. So the celebration is really, really necessary, especially as the two are very, very important, you know, and not just important in providing them. Because you see, the whole thing is you have to use the two to solve the issue of climate change. So knowing this is really, really very important to celebrate, to create that awareness. And if you look at the Water Day, the World Water Day today, there are about 5-6 objectives that are set from this celebration. So that at the end of the day, a platform should be created to solve the problem that are generated by water and energy that have a very strong nexus.
Okay, Shumas is a non-governmental organization, and going by records, you've proved to be a cutting edge in most of the humanitarian services in Cameroon. How has government been supportive in most of these projects?
Yeah, you know, sometimes people feel that the government is not supporting. I think it's false. The only thing that you need to do, the government will not come to you if you have not at least created a landmark. So if you go to the farm on the same day and you want people to feel that you are worried to work, nobody will look at you. So, but once you put your foot on the throttle and you do serious thing, I think the government will look at you. I'm saying this based on the angle of Schumer's. If you look at Schumer's, for example, we have partnership with 12 different ministries. And all these 12 ministries, they support us from the angle of logistics. They support us in the angle. Sometimes there are some that are providing us, even paying for our staff, like the Ministry of Agriculture, that is through Ministry of Agriculture and Livestock, through the program AFOC, that are supporting in paying 7 of our staff members. And all these different ministries, they encourage us to submit even the investment budget. So we get quite a good number of assistance directly and indirectly from the government. And I want to use this opportunity to urge all the private initiative, all the civil society, to keep on working hard and also making the government knowing what they are doing by sending their reports every year. And going closer, they will be able to get the support that is needed.
So what are some of the difficulties you encounter in implementing some of these projects?
Yeah, the first difficulty is peculiar to our organization. You know, most NGOs have the problem of paying salaries for staff. You know, most funding to local NGOs is project-oriented, which means the money is only meant to go to the project. But you know, how do projects come about? You need to carry out feasibility studies, which takes quite a lot of money, and you need to come up with project proposals, which takes a lot of money. You need to support it, send it for funding, which is, you can send 100 projects and just one is approved. So you see how much you put in. So, but when a project comes in and support just the project per se or the project company per se without salaries of feasibility studies and so on, it's quite really very difficult. So one of the greatest challenges that we face is having money to pay for our staffs. That's why we rely principally on volunteers. And when you once you get somebody, say, with a second degree in geography, for example, and you train that person, once the person gained the skill, the job market is there, the international NGOs, they pick that person, and then you begin everything from square one. And I think this is one of the greatest challenges that we have.
So perhaps before we conclude this interview, sir, can you tell us how sustainable are some of your projects?
With all our projects, first, we look at them from the purely holistic point of view. We don't dash on the project from an isolated point of view. And all our project components, we incorporate the element of sustainability, because you don't go to provide water in the community and tomorrow they are hanging on your back to come and maintain it. So we put all our projects, we put some sustainability strategy in it. If we are building a school, the fact that we rely strongly on participatory development, they participate in the project in providing local material, so they have a stake in that project, so that after fundings are over, they will continue with the project because they've been part and parcel of that project.
Thank you so much for talking to Foundation.
Thank you too.
Water scarcity is not only becoming a nightmare, but even when a population is lucky to have water supply, especially if it is from the state supply source, the quality is frightening. In the following paper, Christopher Fogg is of the opinion that the situation may not change if government does not abandon approximate policies.
If there is one truism that Cameroonians cite with an indomitable degree of conviction, it is the one that states that water is life. It could not be otherwise. After all, life scientists tell us that water is indeed the major constituent of living matter. All organisms contain it. Some live in it. Some drink it. From 50 to 90% of the weight of living organisms is water. Blood in animals and sap in plants consist largely of water and serve to transport food and remove waste matter from our systems. Water also plays a key role in the process of breaking down such basic vital elements as proteins and carbohydrates, a process which goes on continuously in living cells. Plants and animals, however, require water that is moderately pure, and they cannot survive in heavily polluted water. Pollution, in the general sense of the term, is about the contamination of the Earth's environment with materials that interfere with human health, the quality of life, or the natural functioning of living organisms and their physical surroundings. In Cameroon, as elsewhere, the demand for potable water rises continuously as the nation's population grows. But judging by what has prevailed within the past 53 years, the Cameroon government and the municipal authorities have not proved equal to the task of adequately satisfying the water needs of up to one-tenth of our municipal populations, let alone those of the marginalized rural majority of Cameroonians, from among whom the more rigorous of our youthful populations have drifted away to the sprawling shanty towns, expecting to find better living conditions for themselves and their families. But ironically, it is precisely in the big towns like Yaoundé, Douala, Bamenda, Garoua, Bafoussam, Maroua, that new arrivals from villages are dumbfounded by the shortage or outright lack of the water necessary for their most basic of needs. What is even more shocking is the fact that in some of these towns, such as Douala especially, are to be found rivers and streams which have been so heavily contaminated with nasty-looking pollutants of all sorts as to be rendered completely undesirable. In a flat coastal town like Douala, where it rains heavily most of the year, standing pools of water and squalid runoffs of nasty water gushing, dripping, seeping, or oozing out of kitchens and toilets, garages, car washes, outdoor food and livestock markets, and runoffs from broken pipes and blocked drainage canals meander through the quarters into the streams into which all the dreadful scum, chemical effluents, plastic garbage, organic solid wastes drift slowly in the hideous cocktail of sludge from other sources into the Atlantic Ocean. The most frightful aspect of this horrific urban scenario is that of the hundreds of infants and kids whose favorite pastime is to mess around and rubbish themselves in the mud, the sludge, and the stinking effluents from the toilets and other bacteria-laden urban scum. Even so, Cameroonians are being urged not only to proclaim, but actually to believe religiously that we shall emerge by the year 2035. Whatever this emergence means is yet to be verified. But this declaration sounds a little too hollow to those skeptics and political pundits who insist that they won't be convinced by the slogan unless there is a proof in the form of a convincing roadmap characterized by plausible benchmarks, indicators, and deadlines pointing irrefutably to that prospect of emergence by the year 2035. Anything short of that will render the declaration simple and unalloyed demagogy.
While the director of Schumer's and Zerem Stephen was of the opinion that the World Water Day is worth celebrating, News Extra's Christopher Fogwe thinks water pollution is a major issue in Cameroon. To be certain of something, you must personally know of it. If you are certain that others are selfish and righteous, this says little about their selfishness and righteousness, but rather about yours.
There are people who can walk away from you, and hear me when I tell you this. When people can walk away from you, let them walk. I don't want you to try to walk another person into staying with you, loving you, calling you, caring about you, coming to see you, staying attached to you. I mean, hang up the phone. When people can walk away from you, let them walk. Your destiny is never tied to anybody that left. The Bible said that they came out from us that it might be made manifest that they were not for us. For had they been of us, no doubt they would have continued with us. People leave because they are not joined to you. And if they are not joined to you, you can't make them stay. Let them go. And it doesn't mean that they are a bad person. It just means that their part in the story is over. And you've got to know when people's part in your story is over so that you don't keep trying to raise the dead. You've got to know when it's dead. You've got to know when it's over. Let me tell you something. I've got the gift of goodbye. It's the 10th spiritual gift. I believe in goodbye. It's not that I'm hateful. It's that I'm faithful. And I know whatever God means for me to have, He'll give it to me. And if it takes too much sweat, I don't need it. Stop begging people to stay. Let them go. If you're holding onto something that doesn't belong to you and was never intended for your life, then you need to let it go. If you're holding onto past hurts and pains, let it go. If someone can't treat you right, love you back, and see your worth, let it go. If someone has angered you, let it go. If you're holding onto some thoughts of evil and revenge, let it go. If you're involved in a wrong relationship or addiction, let it go. If you're holding on to a job that no longer meets your needs or talents, let it go. If you have a bad attitude, let it go. If you keep judging others to make yourself feel better, let it go. If you're stuck in the past and God is trying to take you to a new level in Him, let it go. If you're struggling with the healing of a broken relationship, let it go. If you keep trying to help people who won't even try to help themselves, let it go. If you're feeling depressed and stressed, let it go. If there is a particular situation that you are so used to handling yourself and God is saying, take your hands off it, then you need to let it go. Let the past be the past. Forget the former things. God is doing a new thing for you. Let it go. Get right, get left. Think about it and then let it go. The battle is the Lord's. Next, stop and think and appreciate God's power in your life for doing what you know is pleasing to Him. Yes, I love my God. He is my fountain of life and my Savior. He keeps me going day and night. Without Him, I am no one. But with Him, I can do everything. Christ is my strength. This is a simple test. If you love God and you are not ashamed of all the great things that He has done for you, send this to everyone you know. God loves you and watches over you every day.
If you are just tuning in, this is News Extra on Foundation Radio, Mile 6, Mankon, Bamenda, in Cameroon. Racial discrimination is a phenomenon that is very much prominent in several parts of the world. Reason why? The United Nations instituted the World Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination on every March 20. Even though racial discrimination is not very common in Cameroon, discrimination in itself is very rampant in many sectors in Cameroon. Anderson Akko, in the following write-up, looks at some forms of discrimination within the nation.
Discrimination being the practice of treating somebody or a particular group of persons in the society less fairly than others is almost becoming a call for concern in Cameroon today. Discrimination takes many forms in Cameroon, and its impact is being felt by both the young, the middle-aged, and the old. Some of the negative impacts of discrimination even go as far as touching families, the country as a whole, and even continents.
Forms of discrimination in Cameroon today can be seen in politics, employment, marriages, denominations, and even schools. In politics, many politicians with no knowledge of handling the problems of the masses are usually voted to serve the people simply because he or she is from a particular village, clan, or tribe. In villages with the majority of tribesmen taking part in the election, they usually connive to elect their fellow tribesman. A similar situation can also be seen during marriages, where girls or boys are usually forced to get married only to those from the same village with them, even if they are in love with a foreigner. In another dimension, if you get to most public institutions, if the boss is from Bafut, Mankon, or Njikwa, then the composition of the workers will be dominated by the same tribe, even if they cannot deliver the goods or services offered by the institution, while those who can deliver the goods are unemployed out there. A company headed by a Francophone will hardly offer employment to an Anglophone and vice versa. Even in churches, a church based in a particular land will always strive to vote its elders, congregational chairperson, and group leaders from the same tribe. These discrimination forms practiced all over Cameroon have dealt a severe blow to the individuals, groups, villages, and the country as a whole. Unemployment is on the rise, services are poorly offered, decisions are poorly taken, and the end result is economic underdevelopment.
News Express Anderson Ako telling us that discrimination leads to underdevelopment and no emergence. The March session of Parliament is ongoing. One of the expected major points of this session that also happens, the first of three for the year 2014, was the election of a new bureau for both the National Assembly and the Senate. Marcel Nyat Njefenji has been re-elected president of the Senate, while Honorable Kavayege Jibril will soon celebrate his silver jubilee as Speaker of the National Assembly, following his re-election. In fact, all the bureau members of both houses were retained and maintained. This status quo seems disturbing to Mokun Johnny Nelson, who in the following paper considers both the National Assembly and Senate as rubber stamp institutions apparently occupied by honorable gentlemen who lack the goodwill to move this country a step ahead. His report.
The incumbent bureau of both the National Assembly and the Senate has witnessed no change following elections that held at the start of the March session of both houses. The much heralded and awaited change at the helm of the National Assembly never came to pass. Against all speculations, Honorable Kavayege Jibril was re-elected as Parliamentary House Speaker after 22 long years. While it was evident that the House Speaker would come from the CPDM party, pundits thought this session was going in for a surprise change at the helm of this August Assembly. But old habits die hard, and party discipline and directives had to be respected, and so who could have dared challenge Kavaye's candidacy that surely came from the office of Cameroon's Supreme Commander? It is regrettable that Cameroon's National Assembly has established a regrettable reputation as a rubber stamp parliament, which is governed by party discipline. For years now, Cameroonians are aware that party discipline at the National Assembly takes precedence over the supreme interest of the people and the state. This is so because, like in the argument in Gulliver's Travels, any Johnny Just Come who enjoys popularity or has money can buy his or her way to parliament. The implications are that many of those who enter the National Assembly through influence peddling spend their 5 years mandate sleeping and clapping to the declarations and texts they never participated in drafting, thus sacrificing the entire nation. Bills are tabled and rubber stamped into law without reasonable intellectual debates, while others pass the time staging walkouts in protest of this or that due to party discipline. Others will adopt bills to later regret in snacks, bars, and restaurants where they spend micro-project grants. Many analysts are yet to be convinced of the necessity of a Senate in this country. That notwithstanding, many hoped the senators would be more refined personalities in society, role models, all this to be reflected in the exercise of their senatorial functions. Unfortunately, after close to a year, the population is yet to know what they really do that is different from what the parliamentarians do. Why is it rare to find that species of people with character and conscience in Cameroon so that this country can gain its rightful place that nature has provided but unfortunately denatured by greedy man? If the answer is not in our hands and in sight, then I am afraid this country may just be heading towards a situation similar to that of biblical Sodom and Gomorrah of old. God forbid.
Mokun Johnny Nelson in that analysis. The International Day of Happiness is celebrated throughout the world on the 20th of March each year. It was established by the United Nations General Assembly on June 28, 2012. The General Assembly, conscious that the pursuit of happiness is a fundamental human goal and recognizing the need for more inclusive, equitable, and balanced approach to economic growth that promotes sustainable development, poverty eradication, happiness, and the well-being of all people, decided to proclaim March 20, the International Day of Happiness, by inviting all member states, organizations, and individuals to observe the International Day of Happiness in an appropriate manner, including thorough education and public awareness, and raising activities that help society. On the International Day of Happiness, the United Nations urges action to end poverty, build harmony with cause to promote social inclusion and intercultural harmony, to end conflict and poverty, and ensure the well-being of all. Happiness is neither a frivolity nor a luxury. It is a deep-seated yearning shared by all members of the human family. It should not be denied to all and available, and it should be made available to all, declared Secretary General Ban Ki-moon in his message for the World Happiness Day. He further stressed on the need to always work together to end conflict, poverty, and other unfortunate conditions in which so many of human beings live, such as ensuring a decent livelihood, protection of the environment, and building institutions for good governance. And to have good governance, nobody has to be discriminated upon. The letters you sent on this edition of the program will be up next. Lanza Vela opens our mailbox on this edition of the program. And in letter number one, Dikum Ivor of my sixth neighborhood in Mankon is disgruntled by the recent theft cases in my sixth junction neighborhood in Mankon.
Hello, News Extra. I want to thank you so much for your educative magazine program. Its critical and analytical nature has exposed so many things that long before now were hidden. I am so much touched by the number of recurrent thefts that have rocked the Mile 6 Junction neighborhood in Mankon of late, with a particular off-license and a provision store being constant sufferers. The situation has taken so many people aback, for even a kleptomaniac would not steal with such a frequency. I plead with the forces of law and order to intervene and uncover these thieves.
In letter number 2, Ngwa Beatrice in Bambui is elated by the work done by the News Extra crew.
Let me extend my gratitude to the way with which you handle stories. Your impartial stance on issues of national interest wins great admiration for your program. In fact, it wouldn't take even a passive listener to spell out what your house style represents. Your crew is really powerful soldiers of the pen. You all keep it up.
In our third and last letter, Kongi Leonard in My Three Queen raises concern about the rehabilitation work in a portion of the stretch of road around there.
Dear News Extra, I must use your forum to express chagrin on the patchwork taking place on a small portion of the highway in My Three Queen. If the road is as bad as such, let the entire stretch be graded and renewed. Even if the patchwork has to be done, it shouldn't shilly-shally as it has.
And those were the letters we had on this edition of the program. You can write and send your letters to the producer, News Extra Foundation Radio, FN100, or via email, extranews@yahoo.com, and your concerns shall be read on air. Remember, when writing, keep your letters short and straight to the concerns you're raising without insulting others. The newsstands were once again a focus of journalists this week as the papers carried interesting stories. News Extra's Nyuba Anyangwe also queued the lines for the papers and now presents the following summary of how the week progressed.
Among the several papers we had on the stands this week, we took our time to review The Sun, The Median and The Guardian Post. The Median, just like other papers, carried the lead and story Frundi declares for NCNC at last. The Median quotes him as saying that he is now ready to spill his blood for Southern Cameroons. He made the declaration on March 10th while addressing over 5,000 Wimbom people at the Mbut Palace in Dongamantung, the paper say. The Guardian Post, on its part, give the paper story wherein the national chairman of the SDF narrates confrontation with BR security guards during which the national chairman of SDF was searched and ordered to hand over his cell phone. Smarting from what he qualified as a humiliation of his life in Boyam and the shabby treatment that was served Anglophone reunification heroes, Frundi vowed that he would spend the last drop of his blood fighting for the Anglophones. Another major story that featured in almost all the papers was the death of Lambo Sanjo Pierre Roger Lapiro de Mbanga. The Guardian Post, just like the Median, the Post and others, carried in-depth analysis of the battles he fought with the BR regime, how he missed being lynched by the opposition, and why the family say Lapiro de Mbanga might not be buried in Cameroon. Away from that, almost all the papers on the stand had the issue of Rekukam. The Median had the story on page 7 when Rekukam asserted their legality during a press conference at the Bamenda Ayaba Hotel on March 10th. The Sun, still on the same story, went in depth to quote the Rekukam president, Anya Judith, telling pressmen that the umbrella organization is authorized. The story on page 9 went further to state why 7 credit unions under Rekukam decided to disaffiliate from Kamkul. Page 7 of the Sun newspaper also lavished praises on Azikiwe's outgoing president, Anya Judith Tabifom, for stepping down as president at the end of mandate and giving way to retired Colonel Tamambang Simon, who is now as the new board chair. Another topical story in almost all the papers was the creation of the Kumba University and who take critics for it. The Sun newspaper, page 3, says that while the Secretary General of the Southwest Allied Association, Swela Epie Ekale, is hitting his chest that it's thanks to his efforts, the first Vice National President of the National Alliance for Democracy and Progress, ANTP, Elius Agbo, puts forward a strong argument that it is his party, through his connections at the presidency, that gave way for the creation of the Kumba University. The Median writes an ugly story on the same issue, wherein two politicians in Kumba fight over motion to Biam for the creation of the Higher Technical Teacher Training College, HTTC, in Kumba. The median, Ekale Mukete and Ayok Johnson of Kumba, mount the boxing ring as Benjamin Itwe and Nokombele play the umpire, thereby washing their dirty linen in public over who is eligible to sign the motion of support to Biam for creating the university in Kumba. In other stories on the median, the Northwest population have been advised to register massively into the electoral register. The story on page 9 quotes the Elekan board chair, Dr. Fonkam Azu, as saying that all the 18 members of the electoral board are currently visiting 58 divisions of the country to meet with stakeholders of the electoral process and thank them for collaboration received during the September 30th twin elections. The Guardian Post, when talking about the Senate and National Assembly Bureau elections, as it describes it, as having nothing to write home about. The paper also had as highlight, hundreds of youth decamped to UNGP, Anglophone get first director of Nigerian primary education, former regional delegate of secondary education, Joseph Jika. The Sun, amongst other stories, carried one caption, I infected 324 men and target 2,000, an HIV-positive woman says. The woman from Kenya, according to the story on page 11, said she has accepted her fate and promised to make all men she comes across suffer. More of these stories can be gotten from The Sun, The Median and The Guardian Post on the stands around town. Till next we meet again for what the papers would have said, have this for a bite. Success is a ladder that can never be mounted with hands in the pocket.
Thank you, Neba Anyangwe, for reminding us that we have to respect our civil responsibility by registering in the electoral register. When news hit the airwaves of many radio stations that Lapiro was dead, Anderson Akko was quick to remember the man Lapiro, a politician and musician. His real name, however, was Lambo Sandro Pierre Roger. And Anderson Akko, in the following report, gives us an in-depth and vivid picture of the man known as Lapiro Dimbanga.
He was born and baptized Lambo Sandro Pierre Roger. But as he grew up and started his musical career, he decided to adopt a title that suits his philosophy as Mbanga Boy, Lapiro Dimbanga alias Njinga Man. As he got into music, he used his music to call on youths to be responsible, using typical broken but coded pidgin called Mboko to remind the president of the Republic of the suffering of the time, letting him to know that if he is eating, he should remember all the struggling citizens. This album made him to become very popular as Njinga Man and made Paul Biya to be referred to as Tara. As he continued in music, he became so bold, criticizing even the regime in power, that times are hard. Which can I come with this? You let you walk like a jackass. If you know the fight, keep national. No man go tell you I see ya. Which can I come with this? Mem said you have an opportunity. If you know the for pay organizer, then go back and you side by side. Which can I come with this? But not correct the like cow. If you know the for plan the buffer, you go chicken dance with sans avancement. Just then, Lapiro was advised to join a political party which he did, and militated in the ruling party, hoping to graft a juicy post in the government, but due to his limited educational background, he was only made the quarterhead in Banga. Lapiro saw this as a blow on his face and came up again in his lyrics, opening all the bad he saw, and went as far as insulting even himself that
fire!
He is one of those vocal artists who took the Constitution Amendment matter very personal.
Constitution à gauche.
Hey, Sassel.
Ouais, Sony.
Est-ce que tu connais la dernière cartouche?
Le retour de Papa Lapiro.
Ah ouais, opération Évertier.
C'est ça qui est la vérité.
An album that made him to be wanted by even the regime in power, as it was banned on all radio stations. Now a public figure, the population could hear at least something from Lapiro de Mbanga. Reasons why? When the 2008 nationwide riots, which were packed off by an increase in fuel prices, break out, Lapiro went to calm down the situation as youths in Banga were destroying a French plantation. But instead, he was caught on camera and taken to be one of those who were spearheading the destruction, and so was detained and sentenced for 3 years imprisonment, just as he had predicted in one of his songs. When he came out of the prison, he said he was not going to sing again, but to write a book. But later, released an album that was like a missile into the presidency of the republic, calling on the president to step down before leaving Cameroon to seek asylum as a political prisoner in Buffalo in the United States of America, where he finally died, leaving behind his very supportive wife, who has been so supportive during the turbulent moments in Lapiro's life, 6 kids, fans, and followers like Awilo IPP. May his soul rest in peace.
Rest in peace, indeed. It is with that write-up on Lapiro de Mbanga from Anderson Akko that we come to the end of this edition of News Extra, in which contributions came in from Christopher Fogui, Lanza Vela Venue, Niba Anyangui, Anderson Akko, and Mukun Johnny Nelson. Waters Barry gave us technical support, and for presentation, I have been Priscilla Ninge. We join our voices to thank you for being part of the program and inviting you to listen to a rebroadcast Sundays at 10 a.m. and Mondays at the same time. Until then, stay blessed and stay tuned to Foundation Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Have a wonderful day.